first of all, just due recognition, this is not something that's original with me. This actually, this was prompted by a book by the name of, by a fellow named Larry Osborne, who wrote a book entitled 10 Dumb Things That Smart Christians Believe. We're not going to do all 10 of them. I'm going to try to do two tonight. We'll see how we go getting through two if we can. And thought it'd be worthwhile just to kick this around. Now, can I say, I'd be just as happy for this to be a conversation. You know, I can sit up here and yak away, but I'd like to kind of scratch where you itch. So if right back there in Greece, okay, here, I'll just... if you have something you want to ask, if you disagree, that's all right. Let's just kick this around a little bit, eh? Because these things might sound a little controversial. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe not. Maybe you think, well, yeah, that's right. That's about it. But we'll see how that goes. Now, one of the reasons I wanted to do this is that, you know, if you believe wrong things about God, it puts you in a situation where you could eventually... spiritually end up in a place you don't want to end up. It could cause unnecessary grief in your life. It could cause an unnecessary anger towards God, a misunderstanding about God's work in your life. It can do all kinds of things that ultimately hurt you spiritually. So looking at some of these things hopefully will alleviate a little bit of that, and we'll see how we go. Okay? So, you ready? Ready to watch Jim get in trouble? And I know that's why some of you came tonight. Anyway. Dumb things smart Christians believe. Number one, God has a perfect blueprint for my life. Now, again, I should say that these things... may not apply to you, but they're around enough in Christian circles that, they come up from time to time. And one of those things is, God has a perfect blueprint for my life. Now, when you think about that, in essence, that's kind of an extension of wanting to know God's will in your life. And it's an extension that gets very specific. And we're kind of, sometimes we can have this hope that God's got this blueprint laid out for me, and if I pray and I seek and I just work at it hard enough, I'll find those footprints in the sand and I'll be walking in that blueprint that God has for me. Now, I don't know if that's you, but for some people, you know, I've heard of people that have taken this to such an extent that, you hear about people that they don't get out of bed until they pray asking God what they should wear that day. It seems like God always gets the socks wrong. You know, there's always odd socks. Seriously, people. And now I honor that in one level. I get what people are trying to do. They're trying to surrender everything in their life to God's good and perfect will, you know. So they think, well... God, what should I wear today? Well, God may not be particular. Well, there are some of your wardrobes He might have an issue with, but for the most part, no, okay? So we'll just leave it at that anyway. What's the problem with this idea that God has a perfect blueprint? Well, I think, first of all, it confuses God's omniscience. Now, you know what? That's a big $5 word. You know what that means? God's all-knowing, that God knows everything. It confuses God's omniscience with God's will. God does know everything. But that doesn't mean He plans everything and every bit that happens in your life. For example, He knows the number of hairs on your head. That doesn't mean He has a plan for exactly how many should be there, and that if some of them are missing somewhere along the line, that somehow you've fallen out of God's will. Or if you shave him off, that somehow you... All it means is that he knows. It doesn't mean that if you do something with your hair or whatever, that you're in some you're in rebellion if some go missing. I mean, that's a facetious example, but you get where this goes? See, the thing about blueprints, when you're building a blueprint, if you're building a house and you've got a blueprint, when you're looking at that blueprint, you think, we'll just fudge on this a little bit. And look, we don't really need to do that. Nah. And, don't pay attention to those measurements. Let's just do this. What happens to your house? It's a mess. It doesn't work. It'll probably fall down. A blueprint is intended to be very specific, and you have to follow a blueprint or you end up with a mess. God has not ordered your life like that. God has not, because see, here's the problem is, if God has done that in your life, if you miss one part of it, if you miss any stage of it, it's a mess. And there's hardly any way to get it back on track. I like how Graham Cook puts it. He said, God is in charge, but he's not in control. He's not trying to control your life. God isn't looking down from heaven and moving your life like a chess piece. He is in charge over all things. He is working all things after his will, and he is moving our world steadily towards a goal that he has for us in Christ Jesus. He is definitely in charge, but he's not in control. Because he wants you to, part of what he did on the cross of Christ was to purchase your freedom. So that in a loving, worshipful response to God, you can live that freedom in your life. So he's not picking out your wardrobe in the morning. He's not giving you specific directions for absolutely everything that is in your life. Because he has not created you to be a robot. He's created you to be a reflection of his image, of a living, loving, serving, responsive individual. There's a couple of asides. Anybody want to comment on that? Anybody want to disagree with that? Anything? I mean, you're welcome to. I'm sorry, that says it. Well, sure. Look, I don't want to open a can of worms about predestination, but I don't think we'll be here till tomorrow night. specific to each individual down to the specifics of their life, or is it a general flow of history that God has pre-designed, predetermined, and is working out day by day? And I think that's the difference. Okay?
My understanding is that it's predestined at all, but it's our choice about that. We still have a choice.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because Peter says, it's God's will that none should perish. But some people resist that will. In God's plan,
I grew up with a very strong teaching that if we obeyed God properly, then all would go well and we'd have a nice, neat life that matched the blueprint. But I have found that life gets messy, and I've really struggled with how I feel about myself, because if something's not neat and tidy and
see, what you just said, Susan, is a classic example of what happens when this sort of, we get something like that wrong. it actually ends up becoming destructive in our life. It makes us feel like that somehow we're a lousy believer because we're not, well, and I think that's a burden that the Lord never lays on us. You know, and I think it's unfortunate that. Now, can I say that there are things that are God's will in your life that He's called you into? But you know, 90% of God's will in your life applies to all of us. You know, like God wills that you be saved. You know, God wills that you you walk in obedience and sanctification. You know, there's a whole. Like most of those things, most of God's will in your life are large overarching realities that God has called you into through Jesus. He wants you to believe, to obey, all those sort of things. And you know, those things apply to each one of us, to all of us. Now, but having said that, there can be times when God has some very specific direction for your life. Okay, so I don't want to dismiss that in any way. Cheryl and I had a very specific time in our life when we were going along in ministry, and we believed that God gave us very specific direction about going to Canada. Now, we weren't looking for that. We didn't want to do that, but what the Lord asks, the Lord gets, you know. And you know, you can find other examples of this in Scripture. You can know it in your own life. I think of one. Here's, you know, in Acts 26. This was one that I appreciated. Paul's giving a defense giving a testimony about his life, and he's talking about how he came to be a Christian, and he talks about how that encounter that he had with Jesus on the Damascus Road, and then. He asked the question, Lord, who are you? Who are you, Lord? And then here's what Jesus said. I am Jesus whom you are persecuting. Now get up, stand on your feet. I've appeared to you to appoint you as a servant and as a witness of what you have seen of me and what I will show you. I will rescue you from your own people and from the Gentiles. I am sending you to them to open their eyes and turn them from darkness to light and from the power of Satan to God so that they may receive forgiveness of sins and a place among those who are sanctified by faith in me. Now, the point of that reading that is that there was a very specific point in Jesus or in Paul's life where Jesus came to him and said, I've got a job for you. Now, he didn't fill in all the blanks about what this, but there was this overarching call upon his life, and Jesus basically saying, you're going to spend the rest of your life doing this. And there will be times in your life when the Lord will give specific direction around things. So don't misunderstand this, that part of as God works out his will in your life, there will be those specific times that he will give you specific direction. Now let's get a little more controversial here. Because as we talk about blueprints, where does this come from? Well, I suppose it comes from a lot of places. One that came to mind to me is Jeremiah 29. You know what I'm talking about? How many of you have heard somebody say or have them say over you that the Lord says, I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you a hope and a future. Now, that sounds like a blueprint, doesn't it? It can. I mean, it's very... Well, and that's the point I want to... It's interesting that people use that particular verse or that particular chapter to make this point because... there's anything but a blueprint here. First of all, this is a letter that Jeremiah wrote to those who were in exile. The guys in exile had had all these prophets saying to them, hey, look, this is not going to last long. The Lord's in this. He's going to take you back to Jerusalem. He's going to kick Nebuchadnezzar's butt, and you're going to be back home and enjoying your life like you knew it in the past. And Jeremiah said, don't listen to those guys. They're lying to you. They're just tickling your ears. That's not what the Lord's word is to them. As a matter of fact, and part of what Jeremiah writes is, this is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says to all those I carried into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. Build houses and settle down. Plant gardens and eat what they produce. Marry and have your sons and daughters find, marry and have sons and daughters. Find wives for your sons and give your daughters to marriage so that they too may have sons and daughters. Increase in number there. Do not decrease. Also seek the peace and the prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you will too. These are people who were taken, ripped out of their homes, taken to by a foreign power to a foreign land and in exile. And Jeremiah said, get comfortable and prosper in this place. Because he says, as a matter of fact, you're going to be here for 70 years. Now, when you then read these words, when the Lord says to those exiles, I know the plans I have for you, understand, first of all, it was spoken to a whole group, not just individuals. It was expressing the heart and the truth of God to his people, saying that, look, yes, you're in exile, and this is not going to go away quickly. Two, it was a general guidance, and that's all it was. You know, basically, the Lord said, build houses, marry, find spouses for your children. But he didn't say, okay, Barney, you need to go over and marry this gal, and, you know, Rufus, you need to go over. It wasn't like that. There was a whole lot of leeway in this general sort of counsel that God gave. He didn't tell them what kind of houses to build. Didn't tell them what neighborhoods to build them in. Didn't tell them who to marry. Didn't tell them how many children they should have. There was a whole lot of leeway in God's general purposes in this. And it was going to take 70 years. That meant a lot of the people who heard those words were never going to see it fulfilled. So it wasn't a blueprint for everybody's life, but there was something there that God was keeping his promises. Doug. And I think that's exactly right. I think that's what ultimately Jeremiah was saying, is that, look, I know you feel like you are just being oppressed by this awful dictator. But let me tell you, he's not in control. He's not the one that's ultimately going to work things out in your life. He's not the final word of things in your life. It may seem difficult now. It may seem bleak, but this is not the final word. And we know that later on, God was faithful to that promise, took his people back into the land, returned them from exile. And, again, this was a demonstration, again, that God was in charge, that exile was not the last word, but that he was not necessarily trying to control every individual's lives. He wanted them to live within the promise of that great return that God said he would bring about. But there was a whole lot of living that they were free to experience and live in the midst of that overarching promise. Does that make sense? Because I'd like to, I'd like for you to try to make this practical. You know, when you pray for a job, is it necessarily the case that God has one job for you that you have to find, and if you don't find it, and how will you be sure if you do find it? I tend to think, now that, again, going back to what I said before, there might be a time when God directs you to a job, a specific job, opens a door that's so obvious, you think, and just gives you a direction that gets you to that place. I don't discount that at all. But generally speaking, again, I think of an illustration of Graham Cook. He talks about how he was wrestling, he was unemployed, and he was wrestling with this, he had three job offers, and he's trying to figure out, which one should I take? And he said, well, God wasn't giving him any clues, so his response was, well, I'm not stupid. I took the one that paid the most. Well, he took a step in that direction, but then all of a sudden he took a step in that direction. He found that that wasn't, there was all of a sudden these red lights started appearing. He said, okay, well, all right. See, that's what we really do in our lives, is that we assume that we assume that there are green lights there. That's, again, assuming that we're, you know, trying to honor the Lord with our lives and trying to walk. We assume green lights, but we're looking for red lights. Because oftentimes that's how God will direct us. He'll give us a red light, and you'll have a sense, no, this is not a way I should go. And when you get a red light, you want to be very aware of that. You don't want to run a red light that God puts in there, because he's put it there for your protection and your care. So it'll come, you know. So the other way that this might work out in your life is who you choose as a spouse. I've met young people who believe that there is that one person out there for them. This one person that God has set aside for them. I don't know if you believe that, or you know somebody that has believed that. But I want to tell you, I don't believe that's the case. Now, I have some good friends that the Lord told them they were to marry each other. Again. But I want to say that's an exception. God's will for your life as a believer is that you not be unequally yoked with an unbeliever. And after that, basically he says, you choose. And after you choose, walk in obedience and honor me in your life together. Because see, the problem with if God's just got one person out there for you, if one person gets it wrong, we're all screwed, aren't we? It just takes one person to get it wrong. And I don't know about those odds. Okay? So, I believe that God will be at work in your life, shaping, forming, and giving you great leeway and choices in his overall will for your life. And look, take that as part of God's love and the freedom that he purchased for you, and revel in it. And if there are times where God needs to give you direction, he'll do that. But if you're not getting direction in those kinds of areas, well, just rather than thinking, oh my gosh, I must be a horrible Christian because God's just not, maybe it's God just saying, you choose, go for it. Go for it. Honor me. Whatever you choose, I'll back you. I'll go with you. Okay? Okay? That wasn't too controversial, was it? Okay. Yeah, and that's right. I mean, you what is it, that proverb? Commit your ways unto the Lord, and yeah, you know, I think that's an underlying assumption in this, you know, that it's not just doing it willy nilly, and I'd hope that in an august group like this that would be happening. So, but yeah, Susan. Thank you. Sorry. Hey, it's Sunday evening. I'm.
If my daughter wants to do
her
math type work, she knows she needs to do it. I know she knows she needs to do it, but she's finding it difficult. I am very interested to sit down and help her get it. And I am possibly more interested in helping her do it than she is interested in doing it.
Yeah.
He's there waiting to wrap it over enough as if we get it wrong, instead of being the cheer squad and the encourager.
Yeah. And I get that, and I think you're right. Because I'm still always amazed, and I'm not completely free of this myself, how much of our Christian life is lived in fear. Fear I'm getting it wrong. Fear I've missed what God really wants in my life, and so forth. And doubt. Yeah, just all that. You know. Whereas I think that as we walk humbly with the Lord, as we honor Him in worship, with our not just our words, but with a whole of life of worship, I think God just is at work, and He's just gently encouraging, releasing. At times, giving specific direction, but at the same time, allowing us to work out His good pleasure in the various circumstances that life brings to us. Does that make sense? And we can have confidence about it. Because again, it's about the nature of God towards us. He's not up there just wait. I just can't wait till Susan steps out of line, and I'm gonna lay her. You know, it's not like God's not like that. I mean, some people, I don't know if anybody thinks that anymore. Maybe it's too, but we lose that. God takes so much delight in you. And he loves how that as you go through your life, you do commit your plans to Him. And you want to walk honorably and faithfully with Him. And look, He'll always just back that. Doesn't mean it'll always be great and wonderful. Doesn't mean that it'll keep you always out of trouble and things like that. It doesn't mean anything, but it does mean that God will be with there, and you will be knowing and having experiences of His goodness, His provision, His care, His love for you all along the way. But there's not a blueprint, not this ironclad blueprint that you've got to get right at every step. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are looking at that text from Jeremiah 29 as a real contemporary missional sort of text. You know, we're exiles in a foreign land. How do we live in this kind of environment where increasingly people don't care much about God, don't want to know anything about God? How do we survive in this place? Well, here's one example that God used in the Old Testament. I see that hand.
People that I've seen are sort of being like, hey, if I want to pray for people
yeah, do you need a voice from God to tell you to be kind and to give testimony and express love? Again, a guy came to Jesus one day and said, "Hey, Lord, I'm trying to sort this out. What's the greatest commandment?" So you want to know what God's will is for your life. What's the greatest commandment? What did Jesus say? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. Love God, love your neighbor. Now, there's a will that if you're looking for God's will in your life, there's... Now, can I say that there's a lot of leeway in there? A lot of opportunity, a lot of possibilities? Because that's what happens, isn't it? You know, well, hey, that's right. That's exactly right. And I think that we probably could occupy ourselves sufficiently with the specific things that we do know that are God's will for our life that, you know, we don't have to spend a lot of time. Well, you know, we don't have to get exercised over other minute times except when there's a real need, I guess. That was a pretty clumsy sort of statement, wasn't it? I started saying something, and it just, you know how I see this kind of just, it's kind of a flow of conscience, and it just keeps coming, and it's not, boy, that's just silly. Anyway. Yeah. Well, that's, you know, I mentioned about the Lord directing us to Canada. He did that through prophetic words, through dreams. We knew we were supposed to do this. But once we got there, we still had a choice. That's exactly right. But we made the choice to get there, but then we had no job to go to. We didn't know why we were there. We don't know what was going on about that. Sometimes we still wonder, what was that about? You know, sometimes it's just stepping in faith and trusting. And you know. Well, that's one. Are you game to try another one? All right. It's going on 6 o'clock. I don't want to lay on you. Okay. One more dumb thing. What was that? Fair enough. That'll be my sign to quit. It may be Sunday night and I may be slow, but I can pick up certain signals. So, here's another thing that this one might get me in trouble. Dumb things that smart Christians believe. Everything happens for a reason. Larry Osborne, I thought I had the quote. I tore the paper in half and I brung the wrong half. But It's Sunday night. Everything happens for a reason. That's for your mercy. He talked about... I'm trying to remember what he said. It'd be much better if I could read it. But he talked about his wife developed cancer. And he had all kinds of well-meaning Christians come up to him and say things like, God must really trust you that he's given you this. And you know everything happens for a reason. God must be doing a really big thing in your life right now. It's because he's given you this. And all kinds of things like that. There are a few other things. I wish I'd have brought the quote. Anyway. People basically trying to be encouraging, trying to be helpful, and basically saying to him, well, hey, you know, God's caused this in your wife's life because he's up to something really good and big in your wife's life. Now, again, I don't know if any of you believe that, but I've known people who feel that way. That, you know, when certain things happen, God, everything happens for a reason, so God must be doing something here. Now, where did this idea come from? Again, I don't know if it's totally on this verse, but Romans 8:28, you know, that where Paul says that we know that all things work together for good to those who love God and to those who are called according to his purpose. Some can hear a text like that and on the surface come to believe that everything that happens is part of God's greater plan working out in their lives. That's why I appreciate, I think the NIV translation is a little closer to what Paul's trying to communicate, where he says, we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. See the difference? It doesn't say that everything that happens is good. Brad. And that's the difference, you know. Because again, Paul is not saying through that everything that happens is good, because we all know that's not true. All of you have had horrible things happen in your life, either if not to you personally, to people you know. And there's no way that you can put a spin on that to say that was good. There's just no way. Two, that verse doesn't say that God causes everything to happen. But some people believing that leaves them in a, it causes them to have a view of God that is not very loving. God seems stern. God seems fickle. God seems like he's just this, well, some would think he's a monster. Because if he causes everything, well, why did he wipe out 100,000 people with a tsunami a few years back? Why did God cause that? Did he? See, what that passage, what Romans 8:28 does say is that God is at work in every circumstance, the good and the bad. God is present in whatever we're going through at any particular time. That's his promise. I'll never leave you. I'll never forsake you. He promises that he would be doing his good work in you. He will walk with you through this. That's why he's put his spirit in you to be the comforter, to support you and encourage you. But that doesn't mean that it's that every situation you're going through is that he caused it and that he's going to make it all better in the end. All of us know that there are circumstances that happen in our life that just don't get better. And if you haven't discovered that yet, I hate to burst your bubble, but that's true. I had a 10-year-old nephew had adrenoleukodystrophy. He was prayed over probably more so than anybody that I've ever known. At 10 years old, he died clawing his eyes out. There's nothing good about that. There's nothing redeeming that I can say, oh, well, yes, that was really good. I feel deeply spiritual. That was a deeply spiritual experience. It was awful. I shudder when I think about it. But God was with our family. Where'd that come from? You get the point, eh? That God doesn't cause it all, but He's with you in it all. You know, go back to Romans 8:28. There are some qualifications around Romans 8:28. First of all, that you are a Christian and you love God, and that's basically a definition of obedience in the New Testament. Jesus said, "If you love me, you obey me." So there's that qualification around it. Also, there is a difference, and this is really, really important. There's a difference between what God allows and what God prefers. And that's often the difference in many of these circumstances. Things happen in our world not because God caused it, but because He did allow it. And that's a bit of a mystery to me. I don't have an explanation for that, but He did allow it. He allows it because it's, well, I mean, there's a number of things that we can say about that. He allows it because we live in a broken world. We cannot downplay the impact of sin to distort all of God's creation. That's what happened to my little nephew. This is part of God's distorted creation. That he had this sickness at a 10-year-old. And, you know, we can't downplay it. You know, and that's true, whether it, you know, like weather deaths, like I talked about the tsunami, or whether it's just the people experiencing evil at the hands of others, places like Syria that we see going on now. Could be car crashes, could be diseases, all those kind of things. See, the thing of it is, we live in, we are yet still existing in this broken world that has been deeply affected by human sin, and there is no safety bubble for us. We don't get any pass or any, you know, we don't get any diplomatic immunity from those things. And you all know that. You've all had things in your life already that have broken your heart, that have hurt, brought pain. You know? Two, there's sometimes things happen in life just because we're disobedient. We've run one of God's red lights. And if we live in disobedience, there is no promise whatsoever from God that He will stop. He will step in and fix our mess. God's got a funny way of just saying, okay, He didn't stop the prodigal son. Two, it could be that sometimes stuff happens in our life, not because God willed it, but because we just made bad decisions. I remember, they're not evil. They're just ill-timed or just dumb. I mean, I remember Cheryl and I had been married about 2 years, and I mean, we had no money. But somehow we ended up with like $1,300 in savings. And we thought, we're going to be wise, and we're going to invest this. And we went and saw this man, and he was good. He just told us what a great investment this was and how we're just going to benefit richly from this. And within 6 months, it was gone. Now, God didn't do that. We did. We made a dumb decision. I remember one of the elders in our church was a financial guy, and he said, "Why did you not come and talk to me before you did it?" I said, "I don't know." "I will next time." Problem is, we never had $1,300 again. So, anyway. You see what I mean, though? God allowed that. God could have stepped in and said, "Jim, no." But He didn't. He didn't. You know, so. Just to wrap this up, and just what's our response to all things Everything happens for a reason. Well, I think first of all we understand there's not always an answer to the why question. Some of us go around the bend trying to get an answer to the why question. And God just has this annoying habit of not answering that question. Just ask Job. He tried it. And those of you who know the story, I don't think you want the answer Job got. Go read it if you're not familiar with it. Second response is, obey God and walk faithfully, whatever the situation. Even if you don't understand it, especially if you don't like it, especially if it's hard and difficult, be the most faithful person you can be in that circumstance. And say, look, Lord, I don't know what's going on here. I don't get why this is happening in my life. I don't want this in my life, but I will walk faithfully before you. I'll honor you in this place. It's easy to honor God when things are great. God will sometimes allow stuff in, he doesn't cause them, but he'll allow stuff in your life so that you can grow and be stretched in that place so that your faith actually expands in that place. And again, that's what James is getting at. Count it all joy, brothers, when you experience various trials, knowing that God's at work. I'm not quoting it properly now, but you know, that God's at work in that and will be doing a good work in you. So, but you have that prior commitment, I'm going to be faithful to God in this place. And then just trust. For however long you need to trust God. And even if you don't see the answer that you're looking for, trust God, because you know there is a day that God has promised when he will set everything right. When there will be no more sorrow or tears or pain, because the old order of things, as we know it now, will have passed away. And God's new creation, where all that is in God's heart for us, will come to fruition. And we will rejoice and be free of all this other stuff. Okay? Anybody, any questions or comments? Penny. Yeah, I like his prompting. Pray, God, what can you be for me in this circumstance that you couldn't be in any other? Because sometimes we get ourselves in those kind of circumstances, and God needs to be something here that he's not been before. But he will be. Okay. Enough for a Sunday night? You guys going to play again? Oh, that's all right. Look, we'll, before these guys come to play, we had a good morning this morning. I felt very convicted this morning about what God was trying to communicate. And I'm just like for it to continue tonight. If you have something that you'd like someone to pray with you about, let's do that. Let's do that. We really want to walk and practice what we believe. We really want to be a people in this place who not just talk a good game, but we walk it. You know, that we, when we say that, you know, Jesus is Lord and that he's our healer, it means something. It means something. And look, the only way that we get there is that we do it. We just step out in faith and we do it. Everybody that has ever taught me anything about this has told me that you just have to persevere. Sometimes you'll pray for a lot of people and you see nothing. But it seems like there comes that tipping point where things shift. And I guess what I'd like for us to do is let's keep praying till we get to the tipping point. So that the things that we're talking about, we were talking about this morning around healing and signs and wonders, become again for us normal Christianity. So if you have something that you'd like for someone to pray with you about, the invitation's open, okay? Kat, Doug, you want to come? Any of the young people want to come? Any of you who have been praying? I mentioned this morning, a lot of our young people are already there. They've been practicing this stuff a lot longer than some of the rest of us. So that invitation's here. So come and sing. And while they're playing and we're singing, if you want to have someone to pray with you, please come. Other than that, we're done.